Radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
What could be more important this weekend? What could possibly be more important than making money easier to deal with and then ending up with more of it when you get into retirement, or keeping more of it once you're in retirement, or keeping people's grubby hands off of it, and they're always out there trying to get hold of it? What could be more important? Is there something you're doing right now that is actually more important than that? Come on, be honest. Nah. So you need to give us a call as we talk about money for the better part of this hour on Talking Real Money. I'm Don McDonald. I'm in Florida. That's where I live. Tom Cock, well, he's in the Seattle area. Loosely.
Oh, I'm in the Seattle area.
Well, you know, if you figure anything within like a 150 mile radius in
okay.
Seattle area.
Close enough.
Yeah, Canada's in the Seattle area.
No, that's a good point.
So
Pacific Ocean is in the Seattle
area. We don't make him go there. A little cold. Even this time of year, it's a little chilly, isn't it?
Oh, very.
Yeah, it's
very
not like cold. Here. You go to the ocean. Here, it's like...
No.
Oh, wow. Geez, I think I got to put a little cold water in the tub.
No, it's cold. The water's cold.
Here. So call us at 855-935-TALK, 855-935-8255. What? Go ahead.
I have a question for you. Did you sell all of your stocks on January 3rd when the S&P 500 was at its peak and then buy back in on June 16th when it was at the low?
Of course I did.
And then
I'm as smart as that guy who bought the 36% crypto CDs or whatever.
APY, yeah, that's
yeah. Of course I did. What?
Okay, I didn't know.
Do you doubt my brilliance as a market timer? Okay, I'm lying.
Yeah, I'm lying. I kind of do.
I didn't do a darn thing. As a matter of fact, I just recently sold some, but that was for a tax loss. Well, recently.
So you're not a market timer. You're not prescient. You don't see the future any brighter than anyone else.
No, but I used to play one on the radio. I did.
That's true.
Till I learned you can't do that. Then I stopped. Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that so many people now, they didn't even up to 10 years ago. The financial writers were right pieces like Jeff Sommer wrote in the New York Times. And the headline says it all. To make money in the stock market, do nothing.
Yeah.
Because nobody timed that out right. The reality is you got to know what your risk tolerance, you got to know how long till you need the money, got to know how much you're trying to make on the money, and then you just tune everything out. Yeah, you got money set aside, as Jeff points out, for your bills, because you got to pay your bills, right? You shouldn't have that all in stocks. But otherwise, he says, follow my lead, and you can disregard the market's short-term vagaries. Good word.
Well, here's the real issue with market timing that people do not get. Market timing is not just going, I'm going to get out because I can feel when the market is going down. That's not the way it works. Because let's say you can feel it and you get out and it just happens that, wow, look at you. You got out within a couple of weeks of the top. Good job. You are now going to think what? I'm smart.
When am I going to get back in?
You're smarter than the market. And you're going to say to yourself,
is gonna be high. Yeah.
You're going to say to yourself, well, I knew when it was going to go down. I'll know when it's going to go back up. The problem
and
is
you will not.
You have to not. They say you got to be right one time to get out of the market at the right time. To get in again, you have to be right now two times. But then wait, it's going to go down again at some point. So now you have to be right three times.
Which it's
then
done.
Then you have to be right four Which times. Then you have to be right five times. Do you really believe that's going to happen?
What we see most of the time is people get out after the market has gone down. Mm-hmm. They get in after, guess what? The market's gone up. And then they say, this thing is really, it's going to drive me nuts. The I can't stand it anymore index. That's
and there are so see. Many studies, so many studies that have been done on this that show unequivocally that people, just because of their tendency to get out just after a market has gone down and get in well after a market has gone up, that because of that, on average, the average investor who moves in and out of the market generally makes between 50 and 60% of the market of just buying
exactly.
and holding stuff.
So instead of making, what the assumed 10%, which most people don't make 10 at any rate, you make about five.
Right.
Because those timing decisions are wrong. And again, as you point out, Don, not only you have to figure out when to get out, getting back in. And by the way, what the article does also point out is since that big rally this summer, the market has gone down again. So did you get out again? I mean, did you move
that's
out?
What, after that was my point. You had to get out. Then you had to get back in before the rally. Then you had to get out again really, really, really quickly.
And then now
you've got to wait and get back in again. This is like four times in a year you're going to have to do this.
A lot of work.
Be right work, every one of those times. And it's a lot of work that there is no, there's nothing you can use to improve your odds. There's no information that's going to help you. 855-935-TALK. Give us a call.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Set your course for a great future with a free copy of our 60-page Better Retirement Guidebook at Vestory.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
Your guides to a really great financial future. Tom and Don are talking real money.
Well, you see, my suggestion that there's nothing more important than money apparently resonated with several of you. And you suddenly decided, the heck with that vacation. I'm going to call Tom and Don at Talking Real Money at 855-935-TALK, 855-935-8255, just like Brian did. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Don. Don and Don. Hey, I just want to make a comment about the lady that called in about Vanguard, or not called in, but the recording. I agree with her 100% on the new website. I had trouble, so I called up Vanguard. And I was able to help or get help that I needed. I was having trouble with the Roth. No, excuse me. I was having trouble with the RMD, and you know, making the transfer over to pay it so I'd be okay for the taxes. And this young gentleman did a great job, very good. And I've had Vanguard since I retired 10 years ago. Prior to that, I had accounts at the same time at TD Ameritrade, Schwab, and Fidelity. And I transferred them all to Vanguard, and I've been very happy with Vanguard. So
that is good to hear. That is really good to hear.
You know,
we're gonna hear the worst of it. You know, we really are because we're right hanging out here. We're low hanging fruit. You can knock us over easily.
Yeah, but no, I do agree with on the website.
We think Vanguard.
And again, you know, I'm 79 years old, and I'm
good.
I use an iPad, and maybe if I was using a PC with their website, I would do a little bit better. But anyhow, I have a second question. And
that's funny.
Everything else going down. I'm starting to convert some of my IRA brokerage into my Roth IRA. Is there any limit on that? I know I have to pay taxes on that, but other than that, is there a lot that says you're
converting? You're converting your individual retirement account to your Roth account.
Yeah.
Brokerage, that starts it because that fuzzies things
but
up.
But it's in a brokerage
technically
account.
Is a taxable. Yeah, you're moving money from pre-tax to post-tax. No, there's no limit there. You're just going to pay the tax on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, here's the thing, though, and no offense, because 79 is the new 59. I would be very careful as to how much of that I did at age 79 because you're paying taxes that you may, well, never have to pay in some instances. But again, that's a very personal decision.
No, he sounds young. He's going to live a long time.
He sounds young.
He sounds young. He's going to live a long time. I've decided.
Okay.
And you know, I got out of the market at the right time. I got back in. You know, I'm prescient. I'm omnipotent. Thanks for the call, Brian. We appreciate you being there. Thanks so much. 855-935-TALK. Now, Dwayne, you are up. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Good afternoon.
So hey, Dwayne.
You gentlemen are up there in the same age group I am, kind of. I'm 82, but you're probably not there yet.
Tom's just 81. He's way behind you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, how's your memory back about all around 2004 or something like that? Metropolitan Mortgage out of Spokane?
Yeah, I know the story very well, actually. Yeah. Sandifer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. Yep, I rode that sled downhill. You know, of course, it gets started quick, and you off. So I rode it to the bottom. Over the years after that, I got little payments now and then. I think in the end, I probably ended up with about 30% back, which
Yeah, so this was a case where he was taking in the money and making out, and the books were a mess, as I remember, or the son took over. I don't remember all the specifics other than that they did a bankruptcy and it didn't turn out well for the people that had been investors Mr. Sandifer's fund.
To that. Right. Well, anyway, I ended up with some REITs. And one is the Highland REIT. I don't know whether you know of that or you can find it anyplace. I got about 3,000 shares in that. And right now, they're all worth about, I think, 29 cents a piece. We own a lot.
You're not going to like what I tell you. They're worth 18 cents each.
Okay, well, I figured it was still sliding downhill. What is the first?
Okay, but let's go back here.
Let's get to the question.
Okay, he says, "What should I do with this junk?" I mean, the reality is, after the Metropolitan Mortgage meltdown, you shouldn't be buying individual securities this way, which Highland sounds like it is. Metropolitan Mortgage, you had to rely completely on the faith and credit of Metropolitan Mortgage, which was a bad thing to rely on. Mm-hmm. Again, and this is why we tell people who are listening, we tell you, Duane, the same thing. If you own 13,000 securities and one of those turns out to be Metropolitan Mortgage or Washington Mutual or Enron, big deal. If you have it all plied into this one security, that's a bad deal. But your situation, you're in your 80s and you're trying to figure out what to do with it. So the options are A, either sell it and take whatever loss you have in it, which is probably what I would do because, again, mm-hmm. who knows if it's ever going to go up from 19 cents. I have no idea. Or hang on to it and leave it in your estate and good luck to the next person. Don?
If you want to own real estate, you own real estate through a massively diversified portfolio. Here's what I would do. I would take any REITs I had right now, any of them, any, sell them all. And then I would put the money, particularly if they're, please tell me they're held in a retirement account of some sort, because they should not be held in a regular brokerage account anyway because they're so tax inefficient. And those should all be moved into the Vanguard REIT Index.
Okay, I want to make sure, because when you said if you hold any REITs, people are going to think I hold a REIT fund.
No. Individual REITs, all of them that are traded individually on an exchange of some sort that have a four-digit ticker, a three-digit ticker symbol. They trade as an individual stock because the risks are ridiculously high. Right now, Highland is losing
or lost?
Well, no, their current quarterly financials, the last quarter they lost $1.5 million.
On how much revenue?
Revenue of $7.5 million.
Yeah, that's,
And they're
small.
Their profit margin is -21%.
That's a tiny security.
I know it is I don't know why anybody owns it. It's very small. Market cap's $159 million.
Yeah, that's tiny. Again, that's a pretty small.
Too much risk. No more of these. You shouldn't have done these. But we know that we can't fix the past. If you have them, I'd get rid of them. Totally get rid of them because.
Duane, I hope that helped.
This is the focused portfolio problem. This is the problem we talk about over and over and over again. And what's interesting is that you get fooled once and it's not enough for you. This is what people keep doing. Well, okay, I made one bad investment.
Well, or you get promised something. A Metropolitan, I think, was promising a high return on these notes they gave.
They were out of Spokane,
I'm sure,
right?
And then Highland's doing the same thing. Look at this.
Was that back when you were there in Spokane?
You don't.
You didn't have
any. No, it was after. It was after.
After
I was
you
there.
Left.
But they were in business while I was there. So, but I.
And that's
to
the
do
thing is
downfall.
That these work really well, and this is my favorite saying.
Do.
They work really well right up until they don't, and you never know when. The don't will occur. 855-935-TALK.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
A second opinion could save your life either physically or fiscally. Let one of our Vestry advisors help you save your future at Vestry.com, Vestory.com.
For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
Yeah, I just looked up a story on Metropolitan Mortgage out of Spokane, and so far people who lost, have gotten back like $160 million. And the guy, they say the guy who was named Hansen. I don't know, but he just got sentenced to 48 months in federal prison.
Yeah, and again, individual security, small security, relying on them to tell you, here's how things look, here's the books, and it turned out it was all a bunch of lies. And this is, again, risk you don't need to take in today's world.
Yeah, they were worth $2.3 billion. So
in like 2000 or something?
People only got like $160 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
at their peak, small. They were worth that much. Wow. And that's the problem.
They said they were worth that.
Yeah,
much.
They said they were. Yeah. People lie. It's just that simple. Well, how can I get this question or this thing, this response all the time when I say it's a bad deal? Well, but how can they say these things? Because
same
people
all the time.
Lie. 855-935-TALK. Mike, you're next. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Hello. Yeah.
Yes, sir. What's up?
Well, I've had a longstanding paranoia about Vanguard getting attacked because they were so big and successful. And in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, there was an article by a guy named Dan Morinoff. And he's saying that Vanguard, Brock, and State Street are all going to be taken down because they're competing with trade and all those sorts of things, collusion and so forth. I wondered what your take was on
who was the author? Really,
I read the piece. This
was it in the opinion section?
Yeah.
Tom?
No, I don't think so. I don't. Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was. Okay, I think it was on the back pages. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I read it, and am I concerned? Yeah, this is not the first time this has come up. I mean, there's a lot of concern about how concentrate. In other words, between those three custodians, how much of individual companies they hold, which is a lot. There's no doubt. And this is something I think it came up in a book I reviewed on the podcast as well about sort of the concentration of securities by these firms. Is that a risk? You bet it is. The other part is this has become very political because there are people that are saying, well, wait a minute. These guys are determining, you know, how much, how ESG, the ESG overlay, how companies should have to act, and they're exerting their power and all that in corporate governance.
Oh, yeah, that was that ESG article. That's
I think it was, yeah. Yep, I think it was. Yep. So what do I think the risk is? I think there is a risk.
Risk of what?
I don't think I'd run out and sell the funds. Well,
risk of what?
Okay. Well, you're not going to lose all your money. That's not going to be like Metropolitan.
Well, that's what I mean. What's the risk? Yeah. What is the risk to an investor in the three that they talked about were BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. By the way, in the article, they said they each own each other. That is not true.
I think
you can't
nobody
own
owns
Vanguard.
Any of Vanguard.
You can't own
No,
any
but
any.
You could own the other ones.
Right, but they said that all three each trading. Own each other, but that's not true. But what's my question is, what's the risk to an investor like me? I have my money in VT. What's my risk?
Mike, what do you think the risk is?
Maybe the fees go up because they get slapped with big fines or something like that. But
okay, I go somewhere else.
Not at risk of losing it all.
We're not at risk of losing anything, in my opinion. What we're at risk of is, and by the way, even if the government hit all of them with a fine, which they'd have to have a cause for a fine, and the cause is, I don't even see it. I read the article. I forgot. I thought it was the ESG article. What would they fine them for doing? For being good business people? They could break them up, I guess. But if you break them up, then they'll just be a bunch of littler companies.
Yeah, sure. I think that's one case. And as I say, I think there's also some politics in all this that says they are exerting control over how companies operate because they are so involved in corporate governance.
Right. And if you look, Mr. Morinoff is a civil rights advocate.
Correct.
And the other thing is that it's almost like saying that being successful is a bad thing. And a part of it, there may be even a little bit of push from the actively managed financial industry because they'd like to see these guys stop doing what they're doing.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Tom and I created Vestry to help everyone become a better investor, even those who will never be clients. Let one of our advisors help you start your financial plan or solve a money problem free with no obligation or high-pressure sales pitch at Vestry.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
I love our species. We are thinkers. We are always thinking. We are all, and but then again, there's a downside because we're overthinking sometimes. And there are so many issues that I think we need to look into financially to solve a lot of problems. And we're not going to solve them all. And thankfully, so far, since the proliferation of no-load index-type funds, which has really led to this concentration of wealth in these companies, that's been the driving force that has done that. It has been a very benevolent process. There really hasn't been a lot of horrible abuse. It's just the imagining of that abuse is what gets
the possibility of it. And as I said, in today's environment, and I don't want anybody to call me with a political debate. But I can tell you, everything is oversensitized. Everything is overpoliticized. Period.
All right. Before we go to the calls, no, I want to disagree with you on that just a smidge.
All right.
Because it bothers me when we talk about today's world being so politicized, particularly when someone who knows history as well as you do says that. Have there been periods in America's history where the environment was more politicized even than today?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, and I think this idea that, you know, democracy is more at risk today than it ever has been is a bunch of baloney. I'll say it's a bunch of baloney.
Yeah, somebody forgot the 1830s, the 1850s, the 1860s.
Or the 1960s.
1960s,
the 1930s,
the 1930s.
Yeah, no, people forget that when
1940s.
Franklin Roosevelt was inaugurated, they had machine guns on top of buildings there because they were worried people were going to overrun the Capitol. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I hear it all the time from acquaintances. Oh, my God, politically, this is the worst time this country's ever had.
Yeah, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying people are very sensitive. You're right.
Everybody's
you're right.
Always sensitive politically.
We're
always sensitive to the things that we perceive are in our best interests.
True.
That's the way we are. That's the way we're wired. We're too smart for our own good. 855-935-TALK is the number. Will, you're up next. Welcome to Talking
Save
Real
us.
Money.
Save us, Will.
Hi, guys. Yeah, just a caveat from what you were just saying. Yeah, 1932, there was an assassination attempt on FDR. He survived, obviously, but the mayor of Miami died and...
That's right. That's
the
right.
Mayor of Miami said, at least Franklin survived.
Thank you for actually knowing your history.
Yeah, that's right. And that was in the period between the time he got elected and the time he was inaugurated.
Will, welcome. We're like the last people. I worry about the those coming up because people don't think history is important. My gosh, it's so important. Anyway, go ahead.
Perspective.
We have been basically in a public discussion for over a year now. You first read my communication back on July 15, 21, over a year ago. Okay. I brought to you, and while you were away taking care of your family, Don, Tom and I talked on this radio station on July 16th, which was 7 weeks ago, about the idea I had. And my only hope is that, you know, if you develop an idea and you think it's good, you share it with other people for the hopes that you can help other people. You know, you use it yourself because, you know, you believe it's good and it's fine.
Well, what's the idea? Because I don't remember.
Okay, that's fair. And I had sent, Tom, do you remember? We talked about you looking at the email I sent you back on March 4th of this year. And also talking with team members there who could look into how we can manage RMDs, required minimum distributions. What I explained to Tom and the audience was that there is no required minimum distribution if you have a private foundation, and you have a private foundation that is sponsoring a 401k plan, because you do not own 5% or any portion of it. And then subsequently, I was listening as a regular loyal listener on the 22nd. I was thinking, you know, what we're talking about could have helped, could help Sam and Ryan with his mom, back on the 22nd of July. You were talking with them.
Yeah. Now, Tom, hang on, just a second.
I recall the conversation, and I think I went back to the office to try to find out more about this, but this is a very deep dive on a program that tries not to get too far into things, and I could not verify that what you said was actually practical. Pardon me.
So you're still looking into it?
Yeah, this is something, again, that I took to one of our lead advisors, and I don't think I ever got a firm answer on whether or not you could actually do this, what Will is talking about.
But it's still in process. We'll keep checking on it. Will, thanks for the call. 855-935-TALK is our phone number, 855-935-TALK.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Is your portfolio a mess? You may have a case of hodgepodgeitis, but don't worry, we can help. Just set up a free, no-obligation meeting with a Vestory advisor at Vestory.com. No sales pitch, guaranteed. That's Vestory.com.
Your guides to a really great financial future. Tom and Don are talking real money.
This all comes back to Will's call comes back to a topic that Tom and I have discussed together, I think, on the show many times. We do, as investors, spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out how to get out of taxes. When we started saving, we agreed to the rules of that game. For example, we tried to get out of capital gains, even though when we bought the thing, we said, hey, if it goes up in value, we understand the game. We're going to pay a capital gains tax. Or I got an IRA. Okay, I got a tax deduction for that. So I understand the rules are, when we get to the end of the game, I'm going to pay the penalty or the taxes. And I understand I have to start taking it out before I'm dead. We agree to the rules, and then we're always wanting to change the rules.
And in addition to that, I would say that investing done properly, with the right assets in the right accounts, with the using the proper instruments in those accounts, you can reduce taxes a lot. Can you avoid paying tax if you make money? You know, probably not. And by the way, if you want to debate this further, come and see me tomorrow at the Evergreen State Fair. I will be at the Pompeii Wood-Fired Booth.
Pizza.
This is all true. 11 a.m. tomorrow. And for those of you who come by and say hello, I will give you a Talking Real Money t-shirt. It says Talking Real Money in the front.
You are going to make his wife very angry because he's doing this. This is all a ruse. This is all an effort to get him out of working at the pizza cart.
Oh, I see.
So he can go off and talk to you guys, which is much more fun for him.
Come and see me. It'll be fun. Anyway, this is an interesting topic, but I agree with Don.
Well,
at some level, I'm okay paying taxes. That's because I think I live in a place
that deserves it. And we are still looking into it. We found some papers and things that we just don't want to say anything about something. And the other thing is, this is an expensive lawyer. It requires lawyers. To do this right.
Shocker.
It requires lawyers. All right, let's go back to those telephones, such as they are. Telephones.
Please.
Angel, welcome to Talking Real Money.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the rules on the Roth and traditional IRA. I had always understood that with a Roth IRA, in order to have it be taxed free when you withdraw the money must be in the Roth for 5 years. Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have found that I like the traditional IRA in that I have a 401k with a former employer, and I have the ability to transfer that money in the traditional IRA back to that 401k tax without any tax consequence by going institution to institution, so that I have, I guess, my own little investment company doing their thing with investing well for me.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm understanding. So moving money from an individual retirement account
to a 401k
back into a 401k. Mm-hmm. It depends on the plan, but most plans do accept those sort of transfers. That is correct.
Okay. Okay. And then you touched briefly on RMDs, the required minimum distribution. I have heard conflicting stories about younger, you know, it used to be required at age 70 and a half, but I mm-hmm. believe it has, the rule has changed to age 72. But I've had people telling me it's age 73. Do you know anything about that?
It's going up. It's a rise.
No, it is still currently age 72.
No, no, but what I'm saying, they're talking.
Saying we know it's a likelihood.
Yeah, it is not at 73 yet. They are talking about raising
it today. In today's rules, it is 72. But well, they're actually talking about raising it to 75 within 6, 7, 8 years. That's still in Congress. Today's tax law requires you to start removing the money, taking the money out of pre-tax individual retirement accounts, 401ks, at age 72 and paying tax on it. That,
based on your life expectancy,
is likely to change because it was unanimously passed in the House of Representatives, where nothing does that. Yeah, correct. So, but in today's rules, Angel, you will have to start taking that money out at 72 and paying tax on it.
Okay, and it's based on some kind of actuarial table?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't hear Angel anymore.
Yeah, no, she said, is it based on some actuarial table?
I have a soft voice.
It is,
voice,
yeah, which is very easy to find if you're doing
angelic.
This on your own. Oh, yeah, and again, if that's something you're going to do on your own, that's...
All right, and Tom, you're starting to cut out.
And if that's something...
Tom, you're digital.
No, yeah, it is very angelic. Thank you. The reality is that if you're going to do that on your own, and wherever the money's custodianed off, when they will give you the number.
Thanks for the call, Angel. We appreciate it. And Hannah, you're next. Welcome to Talking Real Money.
Thank you. I always listen to this radio every week, so thank you very much for that advice.
Thank you.
So today I just wanted to get your advice and your opinion about a full Fidelity mutual fund. You know, Fidelity introduced this zero, which is a no management fee.
Yes,
yeah,
ma'am.
No fee.
Yes.
Yeah, so I have these four. I don't really know when I try to pick up, select which one, and how do I consider that? I want to get your opinion. So these four funds, one is a 500 index fund. I think the equivalent to that zero is a large cap index fund, and the other is a total market index fund and a zero total market index fund. So if I would... want to choose, and what are your advice, and how should I look at it to decide which one most suitable to me?
Well, here, I think the zero funds are a gimmick. They are just a gimmick. Because the difference between the Fidelity Total Market Index Fund, as an example, and the Fidelity Total Market Zero Index Fund is 0.5% And it's almost such a small number that it doesn't even count. The zero is at zero, but the total market is at 0.015. That's a non-existent fee for all intents and purposes. And the difference between the two portfolios is actually quite large. Because the Fidelity Total Market Stock Index, which is the one with the tiny little fee, has 4,000 stocks in it. Whereas the Zero Market Index Fund has 3,000 stocks in it. So you're not really getting the whole market. What you're getting is an emulation of the market. And the reason they can charge 0.01% less is because they have fewer stocks to manage in the portfolio. So it's, you give up something to pay pennies on thousands of dollars less.
Okay, that's good to know. So, and is that this zero large cap index fund is kind of equivalent to this 500 index?
Very close. But let me tell you, Hannah, if you're looking to go into U.S. equities, we would rather see you go into the total market index than to go into a 500 index or a large cap index, because you're going to get greater diversification. And that is proven over time to do two things. It has proven, one, to give you a little bit better long-term return, and two, actually reduce the volatility a little bit. Thanks for the call.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Set your course for a great future with a free copy of our 60-page Better Retirement Guidebook at vestory.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
Well, I want to wish all of you a happy New Year's weekend, because for me, this is the new year. We really shouldn't celebrate it on January 1st. We should celebrate it on Labor Day, because that's when the year really starts. And if you want to really get your life started on the right foot, you want to get your financial life together, you want to make the first step in a plan, you want to have somebody look your portfolio over, you've got a little bit more complex question, please take advantage of this offer we've had forever of free advice. Free advice. No sales pitch, no cost, no annoying people trying to bug you to become a client. Just go to vestry.com and set up an appointment, vestry.com.
We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary, investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times. Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately and consistently predict the future, so past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring. Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Capital, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and disclosures. Are we done now?